Planning Commission works on March 7th.
All 7.
It is, yeah.
All right, so for those that don't know what the Arterial Atlas is, it's basically our grid network as we see it in the future. It supports our comprehensive plan, shows how we plan on maintaining that grid network throughout the next 20 years. As part of the comprehensive plan, there's also amendments that are proposed for this. I'm going to walk through several of these, and each slide is going to be kind of like a before and after. I'll try to pick out, make sure that you guys know the details of what the new proposal is. To start off, we have two kind of wholesale changes that we're making. One of them's to the scenic overlay. So right here, you're looking at Lucia Falls Road. The scenic overlay is defined by this green line here. Unfortunately, this scenic designation is not an official classification of our roadway. So what we're attempting to do is take this from a designation as you see it now to more of an overlay. So our proposal is to then add basically this highlight and really showcase that this is a R2, a rural collector with two lanes. Along the same breath as having the scenic designation as a overlay, we also like to do the same with the proposed roads. Our proposed roads in the current arterial atlas just show up as a yellow line. The classification is then a label. So in order to really show how it works as a grid network, what we're proposing is this kind of hash mark. So you'll be able to see how we maintain that same classification all the way through 78th Street, but show where the proposed road is.
That's not railroad tracks.
Those aren't railroad tracks. So those are kind of the two kind of wholesale changes that we're making throughout the entire county. Next, we're going to get into the specific details, and I'll be able to feel free to ask me questions as we go through this, because there's several changes that we're proposing. Okay, 99th Street Extension. This is a road that we would have liked to see go through. It goes, here's 205 here, St. John's, and 72nd Avenue. We had this proposed road in the Arterial Atlas from, 1999, somewhere around there. And unfortunately, the road, I don't know what the right way to say it is, got forgotten when development went through. There was the church went through here, as well as a industrial building here. So the right of way when this development went through was not there. We didn't exact the right of way. So as a result, this proposed road is nearly impossible to build. The reason is because you have the railroad that goes through here, and you have 205. You can't take the road under the railroad because of the huge wetland issues and the high water table. And you can't go over, would be extremely expensive. So our proposal for this extension is to remove it.
I mentioned to Matt that I wanted to comment on this one because I've worked with it for years, and sometimes you look at problem areas in the county and people talk about poor planning, and this is really not an example of poor planning. It's an example of poor implementation and the lack of will of our electors. If we go back to the mid-1990s, Public Works had actually got PID grant to connect that through, before there was anything out there, before the church was at St. John's intersection, it was a wide open path. And some MDs persuaded the board to put an overlay on it that would require some enhanced environmental review. And it sat that way for about 15 years. And then my group and I took it up again to see whether it should remain on the capital facility plan. We looked to find a route that could actually lay on the field and work. And this one was pretty close. It was an undercrossing where the railroad goes under 205, and there's room to put a two-way road alongside of it. So there could have been a connection in that area. But as Matt informed me, since the study was done, there was a large building, that quite rectangular building, that essentially blocks the path of the road. And that was approved apparently by our board. I would have said, correct me if I'm wrong. So this link is gone forever. And as we see that happening around the county, we're going to see more and more congestion. Most of my absolute lanes up on the 19th and that take the load. So it's disappointing and sad to see that this was forsaken.
How does that go directly to the board without passing through community development and the planning commission and everything else?
Yes.
I suspect it was kind of a top-down recommendation.
I see.
Yeah.
What is that?
That is an industrial building. It's called Barberton Industrial.
It's kind of like a business park. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And the world will still keep turning. It's just 20 years from now.
They'll say, what happened to the road we were supposed to have?
You know, it still might make sense to put in some industrial goods in the area. That could be something the private sector folks can do if they develop it out. Sorry to get off my soapbox.
Moving on. The next is kind of along the same breath. This is 99th here and 152nd. This subdivision went in, and the neighborhood circulator was built up to this point. Then after this, the subdivision went in and that neighborhood collector was not extended. This is a large amount of wetlands here, so unfortunately we can't take it around.
So the proposed road? I don't get it. How does it get approved? How would a subdivision get approved in the works of the county government? I mean, you know, down in the bowels where you guys look at it and approve subdivisions, and there was a proposed road there.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
We asked the same exact question. Where, unfortunately, when it comes time to permit, decisions get made without maybe not looking at the arterial atlas. Maybe it was.
So the question is, I don't know if you know this. Did they know that was there? Or do you think it was like, okay, an oversight?
I mean,
somebody knew.
I like to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that it was overlooked and it was just a mistake. I don't know. I don't know what the history of that was here.
Sure.
So as a result, that's being removed. And like I said before, these proposed roads are now changing to a different symbology.
This to a different what? I'm sorry. To a different what?
Yeah,
symbology.
Okay. Yes. Name.
Roads,
okay.
That's why you're seeing
designation. Okay.
Not different designations. These proposed
the
roads.
Track means still.
Used to be shown as just a yellow line,
moment.
And you couldn't tell. This is how they're displayed now.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And you can't
tell
what kind of classification it is.
All right.
So it really needs to be treated as an overlay.
Yeah.
So you can see the classification, how it connects, and then where the
Okay, gotcha.
That's super nice.
This one's kind of hard to see. This is, Hawkinson is over here. This is the extension of, I believe it's 212th Avenue. This is a very difficult connection to do with, there's several different residential homes here. There's wetland here. A stream there, not a wetland. So we're proposing on removing that and changing the RM classification to go up and around. So instead of going through and making that difficult connection, because there's already existing homes here, we're planning on rerouting. This is 159th, this is Brush Prairie. Here, you see 159th, here's Caples Road that goes across, and 503 that runs along south. So this was a proposed road that went through the center. WSDOT standards say now that you can only have a signal every half a mile on 503. Along with the different typology that occurs here, as well as here, we had a complaint by a citizen that had a development that occurred right here, and they wondered why they were, the right-of-way was being exacted from their development. So they talked to the board. We conducted an independent study on the feasibility of making this connection, and the feasibility study came out and said it really isn't a road that you would be able to build, and you'd spend a lot of money and not get a lot of value. So we're proposing on moving it.
So no overpass.
No overpass.
Yeah.
Salmon Creek Avenue, here you see Washington State University. This Salmon Creek runs along here. Bill is very familiar with this. This road is eroding rather quickly because the stream is changing channels. And the county has a project, actually I believe it's in the existing zip. To reroute that road away from the stream up and down. So we just wanted to show that alignment on our proposals.
How much is that right away?
That was a special, that was a part of when the SCIP project came in, Salmon Creek Interchange project, there was negotiation that happened with Washington State University that allowed for us to take that right away.
That's good. Yeah.
We have several rural classifications. This one here, this is Cardi Road, that are inside the UGB. We like rural roads. Urban roads should be inside UGBs, rural roads should be outside UGBs. So we'd like to change that classification to a C2. This road here, let me rewind. Oh, there's the arm too. So that changes from the yellow again to that hash mark. This is the new urban growth boundary of Battleground right here. You can see the rural road classification RM2, 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 as well as down there. We'd like to change those to urban standards. Sorry, that one's kind of difficult. So now this becomes a urban classification, urban classification.
And so that means anybody who develops on the county side has to bring it up to urban standards.
Correct.
And then we give it to Battleground?
I'm sorry?
When Battleground moves out,
yes.
Then the road is at urban standards.
Right. Exactly, as they develop. This is the proposed urban growth boundary for Ridgefield. Here you have another rural classification, R2. That's proposed to change to M2CB. That's minor collector with two lanes, center turn, lane and left lane. Here's the center. You have the urban growth boundary expansion right here. You also have this bridge. This is a bridge that the city of the center at one point wanted to build. They sent us a letter saying they no longer seek to build that bridge, and they would like it removed from our tier office. So we're proposing to remove that as well as redesignate this classification to urban standards as well. Fifth Plain Creek. Here's, you dealt with this back in 2014. This was a, these were rural roads that were not upgraded when the urban growth boundary was expanded. So there was a hearing to redesignate those roads to urban classifications. At that time, the board removed the extension through Monet's Garden from the arterial atlas as well. This development has come in for preliminary site development. We've also worked with them to find out the future alignment of that road. So we're changing it to directly across. This is how the development proposed to have the right of way directly 78 directly connecting to 187. This is my favorite one. This is 503 right here. Here's 119th Winco. Here's an industrial classification. There was a sub-area plan, or not, I'm sorry, not a sub-area plan, a neighborhood circulation plan that was done back in 2007. And this industrial classification was put in the arterial atlas. Anybody know what that is?
Cemetery?
Cemetery.
Right. Oh.
So we're not going to build a road through a cemetery.
Which means I don't have to Except go through another
It is really hard to get to that cemetery.
Yeah.
If you're coming from the church with a hearse or to go to a graveside service, you've got to go way up.
No.
To, what is it, 130 something and around and down 99.
So go back there for a second. So are we looking at signalization across from Prairie High School then?
No. Again, on 503,
yeah.
The state will not allow new signals, only every half mile, which
so
is...
So that would be a right turn only?
That'd be right in, right in. This is a urban classification. Here's 172nd, 117th, Ward Road. It's right here. This is an urban classification, but it's outside the urban growth boundary. So we're planning on changing that. Camas Washugo urban growth boundary. Again, you have rural roads that are inside the urban growth boundary. So very similar to the last ones. We're changing those, proposing on changing those to urban classifications. Salmon Creek Interchange, this has not been updated since the 139th extension was built over. So this is a very simple change to add that classification and force you. This is
between Battleground and the Vancouver urban growth boundary. This is 199. And we have a current policy that says when two urban growth boundaries connect to each other on a highway like that, or a road like that, 192nd, that we bring it up to urban standards as well. So this is one of the exceptions where we're putting a urban standard road outside the urban growth boundary.
What urban centers don't connect to each other?
I'm sorry?
What urban centers don't connect to each other? I mean, isn't it all just a matter of distance?
Yeah.
All right, so do we have a do we have a standard on how far the distance is?
No, because 72nd is a major corridor north-south, this was proposed to be signalized here. Sorry, right there. So as a...
It is. That's
It's getting a new signal, anyway. So because of that project, that's why we proposed that standard. But yeah, you're right. There's no real distance or metrics that says 5 miles or less or anything. And I believe that's it. Questions?
How often do you change the arterial atlas now? Is it like an annual document?
It really should be. I think the last time it was changed was 2014, while with the
Michael's here.
Yeah. But as you can see, a lot of the changes that we're proposing are really cleanups. But hopefully once we clean this up, we can continue to reassess it annually with our annual reviews and move forward to make sure that it's as current as a depiction of our roadway network is. Yeah. All right, thank you guys.
Counselor.
Sizes for ag and forest is a clustering provision.
Community planning staff made a presentation to the Board of County Councilors yesterday about clustering and why we need to do clustering and to get their feedback. And they seem supportive of it because we need to do that in order for the growth management board to hopefully support reducing the minimum lot sizes. So we're in the process of researching clustering and to draft a code language. And in a subsequent work session, we'll come back to you with that and show you that code language. Any questions about the rural resource and rural districts? Okay, I'm going to move on. Next change was commercial lands. You can find the Title 40 development code, proposed development code language. It's located in Exhibit 3 of your binder. We have three comprehensive plan designations for commercial. We're going to change that and have just one comprehensive plan designation for commercial. More of a stylistic change. We thought it didn't make sense to have C2, C3, and then GC. Our proposal is instead to have NC and CC development code designation. We think it's more scripted. NC for neighborhood commercial, CC for community commercial. Any questions?
What was GC before?
Yeah, it's GC is going to remain the same, general commercial.
Okay, gotcha.
And then also I'd like to add that with the one comprehensive plan designation, you'll see in the code language that we've included more kind of more descriptive purpose statements for each of the districts. We also are going to add more language in zone change part of Title 40, there was a concern that it could be done too easily, that you could change a district too easily from, for example, from community commercial to general commercial. So we're going to add code language so that they have more criteria to address. Next two changes, first of all, is the resort overlay. That's in Exhibit 4 of your staff report. That's a cleanup kind of change, I would call it. We looked at the comprehensive plan language about resorts and made the assessment that it would be more appropriate to have that language in the development code. We now have a code language that talks about existing resorts and then the standards if should someone want to propose a new resort. And then Exhibit 5, the equestrian overlay. That's previously approved language that was not included in the exhibit of the adopting ordinance, and so we're just going to simply have it in this adopting ordinance so that it can go into the development. Next is urban reserve overlay, and that's Exhibit 6 of your staff report. We're just going to make this an overlay. Right now, it's a little confusing. It's a district and an overlay. We're just going to make it a true overlay. Move it from the district part of the development code to the overlay section of the development code.
Lori,
yes.
What will that do? What will that do that's different than the way we're doing it now? Why are we making that change?
Because right now it's in the land use district section of the development code, and it really is an overlay. I believe there's some urban reserve that we don't have any land. That I believe we currently have one district that's urban reserve 40. And we don't have any land that has that designation, so we're going to eliminate that designation. But basically it sort of functions as an overlay. We do have some land that has that zoning on it, and we're going to change that to R5 because it really should function as an overlay rather than a district.
So the restrictions remain the same?
Yes.
But we're just not tying it to a specific zoning acreage requirement.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right. It will function as a true overlay, and when a piece of property has that overlay, these are the additional restrictions on that land. The next one's urban holding, and we're doing the same thing with urban holding that we're proposing to do with urban reserve. It's not changing the allowable land uses, and we're just going to default to the underlying zoning. And in terms of the development code, we're going to move that section to the overlay section. Are there any questions? The next one is we're going to create a new public facilities chapter in the development code. We currently have in our comprehensive plan a designation of public facilities, but no zones implemented. So we've created a zone in the development code that will implement that comprehensive plan designation. We took this proposal to the Parks Advisory Board at their February meeting. They supported that change and voted to support that code language. And then as part of the public facilities chapter, we expanded the parks code. You can find that in Exhibit 9 of your binder. Currently, the parks code just applies to neighborhood parks, and the Parks Advisory Board wanted to see that special use standard expanded to include commercial or community parks and regional parks. So what you'll find in your binder is we changed the language so that we had standards for community parks as well as regional parks. And then finally, in Exhibit 10, when you go in and make all of these changes to the development code, it has impacts on other parts of the development code. So what you'll see in Exhibit 10 is all of the parts of the development code that we had to go and change so that it matches what we're doing with our proposal for the Title 40 changes. And that's all I have. Are there any questions? Overhauled that chapter and just included all the language, all the applicable language from the adopted county parks plan into that chapter. So what you'll see in there will match what you see in the county parks plan. And that's in your binders. If you have any follow-up questions, I'm happy to answer those questions about parks. I'm going to turn it over to Sharon from Community Planning. She's going to talk about the environmental chapter and the comprehensive plan.
Let's do it right from here. So if you have tabs, it's tab I, the environment chapter. We did not make that many changes. We just updated facts and figures and referenced new master plan. Very minor changes, actually, in this chapter. We gave it to each department to update their own sections, so this is reflecting their feedback. That's about it. Just tab I. There's two versions. There's a versions with track changes, so you can see exactly what the changes were made, and then there's a clean version for reading. It's easier. So you'll see the two versions. Each chapter has that format. Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Beautiful day outside.
Are we moving on to historic? Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm the staff that does the historic preservation program. So I worked on the changes to the historic element. My name is Jackie. I'm sorry, Jackie Camp. And what I tried to do with this chapter was to kind of just give it some refresh. When it was written and for the first comp plan in 94, The historic program was run by a nonprofit, the Heritage Trust. And so soon after it transitioned, it became under the county. So a lot of the policies and language was kind of moving it towards being implemented as it is now. So when I go in through the policies, I try to kind of give a fresh look at what at least the historic program and the Historic Preservation Commission kind of goals and missions are to move the program forward. So that's kind of was my take on the changes. They were reviewed by, I staff the Historic Preservation Commission, so they did review that. And they also the State Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, which is our state historic preservation officer, they also reviewed the changes as well and provided feedback, and those were incorporated into the chapter. So, if you have any questions for me, I'm here to answer. If you want to get back to me, that's fine too. I also wanted to, since I don't get to get in front of you all, I wanted to share that we recently launched a mobile app for our historic sites here in Clark County through a grant that we got from the state of Washington for the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation. So I just wanted to take one of those to find out a little bit more about it. Just download it on your phone and you can see all the historic sites that it'll show you where you are and what historic sites are near you, or you can just kind of explore with the map function. So
is there any changes that have come from the idea of being able to do a development, or is the discovery process still pretty much the same as it's been?
You mean for like archaeological?
For archaeological.
Yes, it's still it goes through the SEPA process, and they work with the state now, Department of Archaeology. There are archaeologists up there for any review. So
we do the normal survey, and then it's the state that's reviewing it, not county staff.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
So I imagine a lot of these policies are just being in components of state law, highlighting those points.
Definitely. And also more of what, kind of more awareness and working on getting the word out about the historic preservation program to encourage more property owners to nominate their properties if they're eligible so that they can be protected. And there's tax incentives and such for property owners that are on the register. So that's kind of the mission of the program. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look like a good timing.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
No. We're going to look at tab K, which is the economic development element. You have seen this before. I really don't know if you have questions. We have, as Jeff Swanson, who is the county economic development manager, to review this, as well as EDC. And both have reviewed this chapter, and what you see here are the recommendations and suggestions that they've made. I don't have any particular area to highlight for you, but one section that is not in here is the development action plan that is being reviewed and considered. You will see that as soon as we are done with that. That is no more than 3 or 4 pages that really stress what is the county economic development action plan. One of the highlights of what I've changed really here is emphasis on really focusing on both traded sector industries and focusing more on opportunities for high-tech and low-tech industries, and still recommending that we maintain a minimum of 10-year supply of both industrial and commercial land, and that we continue to monitor the absorption of vacant and available land for development. The other emphasis is to really focus on site readiness for our valuable industrial land, and also to, in doing so, to focus on what needs to happen in terms of infrastructure investment. If we identify these opportunities, can we focus on providing the necessary infrastructure for those sites to develop? So that's really a new shift in emphasis of economic development for Clark County. That work is underway now. The county hired a group, McKenzie, to help us do a couple of sites and come up with opportunities to get those sites shovel ready, if you will. You have been here for quite some time, Steve and Ron. We talk about prime, secondary, and tertiary land and shovel ready. This is the effort to prepare the county to effectively compete, not only internally but across the river. When we talk about industrial land and economic development, not only in workforce training and other areas, but what do we do to get our lands ready? And secondly, not only just bringing land into the urban boundary and applying urban holding to it, that doesn't get you nothing. So let's focus on site readiness and use that opportunity to prepare those sites for development. I know that my staff is involved in helping them on transportation-related issues, where there is need to amend our Tirol Atlas and identify internal road access and so forth. We are doing that work internally to help that effort. We've also engaged Department of Environmental Services to do the initial delineation of wetland, and where appropriate, what type of measures, if you will be employed where we need to protect wetland and other features. Because one of the issues we run into is the land is conversant with environmental issues. How do we begin to deal with that and do any applications, if we have to do that, to get those sites ready? So that work is underway. I know that another emphasis on that, on this effort, is to continue to engage in the land for jobs inventory so that we can really know exactly what is available for development. So that's really the theme of this rewrite. I don't have anything more to add. If you have questions, I'll take them and see where we go.
Oliver, we're not bringing additional industrial lands acreage into the plan.
That's true. The only site that is being considered is the 56 acres in Los Santos. That's it.
Okay.
And the 80 acres mixed-use site in Battleground. That's it.
So, that being said, what you're talking about, shovel-ready, this is basically our same initiative thought process that we tried to build on 2007 plan.
Pretty much, you as you can recall, you know, we have done so many studies in terms of areas that the county have identified as focused public investment areas. That work is still relevant and is still being used as a stepping stone, as a foundation to focus on. Let us not abandon that effort. Let's continue to build on that. As you know, we identify, for example, the Barberton area as one of the focused public investment. This site readiness effort is part of that endeavor. There are so many parcels, as you know, out there that we designated as industrial, but it requires, in some cases, assembling those parcels together, consolidation, working with the property owners. This effort is going to be very similar in what happens in Oregon in terms of site, what they call site certification. So this is an effort to bring us to par with what is happening across the river in terms of site preparedness.
So the reason I'm bringing it up is I'm wondering if you will be able to delineate for us the steps that we're going to take as a county governance that's going to be different this time than the last time we talked about the same thing. Hey, even if that means that the board needs to see these steps and see if they can buy into the approval process, because it seemed like we got it all down on paper, but we didn't act on it.
Yes, and this is the effort to take the opportunity of those initial initiatives and do something with it. As you know, the county had, for quite some time, didn't have really any emphasis or focus on economic development. We have relied on our partnership with EDC, and you can recall that the City of Vancouver established Economic Development Department. We tried that effort by hiring Kelly Sales, if you recall, as the Economic Development Manager, and through that effort also hired Jeff Swanson, who now will be the city manager in Battleground, also to emphasize not so much on developing economic development department, but more or less what can the county do, because as you know, there's very limited that local governments can do when it comes to economic development. You can only enhance the capacity or create the environment for economic development to happen. There was emphasis on routining our code, giving fast-track review to application for both industrial and commercial development. All those things are not going to go away, but that's really elevating what the county is doing in terms of enhancing opportunity for economic development. So that's what is a little bit different. We talked about public focused investment, we put that in a shelf, nothing happened. So this is an effort to say, okay, how do we move this one more step?
And I think the word investment portrays to the public that we're actually spending public funds in anticipation of the development.
You can characterize it as such. Bill will agree that in the past, certain projects, if it enhances economic development, get some ranking, you know, how soon that come online, if it helps or enhances economic development, that is not going to go away. But when you talk about investment, you're doing so in terms of how do we leverage both private and public investment in those areas, you know, to make something happen. When we look at the Barberton area, for example, we recognize that there are certain streets that doesn't go through, for example, 41st. Now we are taking a look at that. How can we and what can the county do to realign some of these streets to make it more accessible and provide internal circulation for those areas and realign our operation center with, I think it's 41st, if I'm not mistaken. So, and what opportunity would that bring 47, what type of opportunity would that create as those investments are made? There are a lot of industrial land tucked in those areas, but there is no access, for example. So those are what I mean by some form of investment. And also working with service providers. As you know, we don't provide sewer, nor do the county provide water. So we are making and reaching out and coordinating with CPU and other service providers to align their own capital investment with the initiative of the county. That's all we're trying to do. That's what is different.
Well, I think you look back in the last five, 10 years, the county has some pretty sophisticated approaches to encouraging development where they form partnerships with private entities. For instance, establishing a roof area on 179th,
yes.
Which with the idea that as an area develops, the taxes then flow into accounts and paid back for the county investment in roadways. And of course, recession didn't help any of that, but
yes.
You know, it's still something that will happen, I think, in the future, probably within the next 10 years.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when you talk about economic development, there is no magic one approach fit all. But the county is also making some significant effort by working with a local representative to allocate funding for improvement of 179. The state have done that. Now it's on a cycle to occur in the next 6, 7, 8 years or more. So, but those are the type of effort that the county can make. How can we reach out to our legislature? You know, I know it requires some arm twisting to bring money to Southwest Washington, but those are the type of things you have to identify. Where can we have some leverage and identify those infrastructure that needs to be developed? You hear me say this often that the Brent Gehring at the Port of Richfield have done a very good work in terms of making improvement to the Richfield Junction and what impact that have made over the years to see Richfield become an attractive place for most people to go to. Before, because of lack of infrastructure, everybody ignored Richfield. Now the land at the junction is very expensive than any other place because of the improvement that have been made. That's the approach that the county wants to take, not just talk about it, but do something to enhance the capacity for certain actions to call. When we started this plan update, one of the emphasis that the county staff was pushing is, it makes no sense. Occasionally we say we are not doing any planning. I said, well, we don't have the opportunity to do planning because immediately we finish the plan, and maybe this may be editorial, but immediately we finish the plan, we are appealed, and we spend years dealing with the appeal, and then we start over. We have no time to do much, you know. And two, we have not stepped back and said, what do we do with all this inventory we carry in our urban growth boundary. What do we do with it? If it's not good, let's reason. We've had that conversation. But every time we have this land in the inventory, nothing happens to it. We went to the port, for example, Port of Vancouver, and we said, okay, your land, at the time we were characterizing the port property as tertiary, they were upset. You know, they weren't happy that we're calling their, describing their land as tertiary. We said, well, if you want it to be prime, you gotta make the investment to bring it up to par. And they tried, you know. I mean, the port is running out of capacity, but it's that investment and determination to bring those land for ready to develop is what is making the property move. The same will be true in what is happening in Port of Camas, Washougal. Same concept. It takes time. And we're also asking folks to have patience, because when it comes to industrial land, it takes time, it takes patience to see something happen. But I think that's really the emphasis that this element is focusing on.
You just mentioned the Horace Mill, and I know that Jeff Swanson was working to establish a relationship.
Yes.
But I don't see a whole lot of language in my reading of this that emphasizes the importance of this development.
That is going to come in the form of the Economic Development Action Plan. That's our hope. Those are where we can put those. What would be the policy? I mean, you can always put a policy, encourage economic development or cooperate with the port, but you can put something in your, what's the strategy to make that happen? Is it going to be a 1 year, 2 year? What is your timeline to build that? So we are looking at putting all those strategies in the economic development action plan.
That's really their business.
Yes, exactly. So that's all I have. I know this is, you know, you have a clean copy and you have areas where changes have been made or proposed, underlined. I don't want to go into page by page, but I think this has been really structured much, much better, easier to use. What are our guiding principles? We've tried as much as we can to delete emphasis on the largest employers in Clark County. We don't think that's really significant. It just puts some numbers and so forth. And we are going to continue to, because I think one of the things we hear from the development community is that processing application takes some time, and they want 60 days and giving preference to properties that or developers that provide, call it a living wage or family wage. There is some discussion in the action plan to see whether, and I may be getting ahead of myself here, but whether the fee waiver can be much, much targeted to industries that provide family wage job, rather than giving everybody a fee waiver or something like that. So that conversation is happening as well.
If they're actually willing to divulge what they do in the way of wages.
Yes.
Yeah. Which has always been the sticking point.
Yes.
Competitive advantage.
Huh?
Quality restaurants.
Well, you know, quality of restaurants is one that have been out there, particularly in the Hazeldale area, correct? But, you know, system development charge is the issue.
Yes.
Yes.
We just wanted to make sure that the first kind of item up there, the comp plan policies previously reviewed by you all in 2014, I think you got all of them, but the one that I spoke of today, and back in 2014, we just kind of wanted to brief you that, and I think you all talked about it at the last Planning Commission work session, we were originally going to have one chapter called Community Development that had land use, historic, and community design all combined into one chapter. We've moved on from that because of our time constraints. And also we thought the historic should kind of stand alone because it's kind of its own separate thing. So we just wanted, you have those because you didn't receive them in your last packet, just so I wanted to kind of just inform you of that. If there's any questions, I'll be back for you to talk about the land use chapter and the community design chapter.
So if you wanted to compare what you saw 2 years ago with what's currently in the proposed changes, they should match. But when it comes to this particular document, it's three chapters.
Question about eliminating the employees. Because I haven't read all the way through this yet. Were sectors and types of employers in Park County enumerated in here? Anywhere in the new?
It is in our code.
But it isn't in this.
It's one of the things that we did is we partnered with CRIDC when we did the inventory.
Yeah.
And so that information is still current. So we referenced that document as a basis of the data for this particular chapter.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not losing much except that Colette is correct. Some of this we are putting it somewhere else, so we're not losing it. But when you get to our code, you will see that the industry sectors are in our code, and we use the NICS, National,
North American
Industrial Classification, in developing our code. I know some of my staff don't like that, but it is out there, and it is very thorough. And it lists every potential company that you can think of. And that was the basis of writing our code. It goes from 3-digit to 4-digit to 5-digit sectors. And some of the mighty shop find it useful. Some people still struggle with it, but it is very comprehensive. So that's in our code. You will find that in our code.
I just want to wrap up by saying that what's coming next, except for the potential cluster text for Title 40, you now have, we believe, all of the Title 40 recommended changes. There are 5 comprehensive plan chapters left, and they're the heart of land use, transportation, the CFP, and I don't remember the other two are.
Have they seen housing?
Rural and housing.
Housing, okay.
Thank you. They're coming. You will see probably 3 of the 5 at the April 7th meeting, but 2 will not be done until the 21st. And the 21st will be a short work session because you have a hearing that day. The CFP is probably 80% done now. You probably will get it in between the April 7th and the 21st. Work sessions, but you will have it enough time to read it prior to the 21st, so we should have question time for that. And then the Clark County financial plan will be running late as well. That'll also probably show up in between the April 7th and the 21st date.
In addition, we're looking at roughly the April 18th, which is the Monday, full release of the final supplemental, so that'll be another document. That document will be on the preferred alternative that we've been talking about. So you've got a lot of material coming your way in a very short period of time. We apologize for that, but there's no other way to do it.
Well, you know, I that's what I was afraid of, that you're going to be getting this now that the board made a selection of a preferred plan is upon me and my staff to work hard to see if we can meet the deadline. We still are obligated to submit whatever we've completed to Commerce by April 30th.
A couple other things. Last year, Jose brought to you the school impact fee conversation. It never went to the board. So, it's going to get adopted. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes.
It's getting adopted through the comp plan process, we hope. So when you have your joint hearings with the board, there will be a conversation about school impact fees. It'll be rerun for you guys. There's no changes proposed. That's so that they can take an action in June. We're also going to have park impact fees coming your way as well, and that's, I'm not sure when that's going to happen.
It'll be at the April 21st work session, the same time as the capital facilities committee.
And I think the reasoning for that is, thank you, Colette, the reasoning for that is what we have asked the school, this, it wasn't intentionally left for the board not to consider that. We know that at some point, timing is everything. We wish that they would have waited, if you will, and look at the proposed plan that the county is considering now and see how that matches with the CFP that they produce. What we are asking them now to do is to reaffirm that based on the preferred alternative that is now under consideration, that their capital facilities plan is still good to go. That's all we're asking them to do. Particularly for Battleground, that may be the case because, as you know, Battleground is predominantly with also Hawkinson, and what is it, Hawkinson, Battleground, and Green Mountain School District, they're all rural. And with the potential additional home site in the rural area, we want them to revisit their CFP to reaffirm that they need, you know, and to really reaffirm what they have submitted and whether they need to make some changes. That's why we're asking them to, that the timing now is good for them to revisit that. So you'll be seeing it one more time. Some of them may come back and say, you know, we are good to go. We will continue to provide educational opportunity for kids that show up at our doorsteps, you know, and we will revisit our CFP in the next 3-4 years. That may be what we get back from them, but we'll give them that opportunity to reaffirm what they have submitted. You may see again, I know this have come before you, you may also see the traffic impact fee. You may see that one more time. I don't know, because again, some additional growth, if you will be going to the rural area. I don't know whether the rural TIF is gonna remain the same or not. So, you know, timing is everything. So you might see it one more time. It may not change in the urban area, in terms of the TIF district in the urban area, but in the rural area, we may see a change in the rate.
So the board hasn't seen the...
they haven't acted on it.
Today?
No. I mean, for some reason, there was conversation. We took it to the board in a work session, I believe, and scheduled a hearing, and they asked that the hearing be pulled because they want to consider or have a conversation. Bill, you will recall that we used to have one rural TIF district. The work that was done recommended that there be two, and the rate went up significantly, and the board wasn't happy with that, and they want us to revisit that. One other issue that they raised in our conversation with them was they wanted to see, and I may be wrong here, but I think that my understanding is that they wanted to see both the multi-family and single-family rate to be the same. Yeah, and we are saying there's no way. You know this more than I do, that the IT manual has a different rate for single-family and different rate for multi-family. We have no basis to make the two multi-family and single-family rate to be the same.
So you're going to reiterate them with the new changes?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we may continue to maintain that unless we go out there and do or the councillors ask us or commission a study for us to go and look at what should the county single family rate be and multi family rate be and move away from the IT manual, which have been standard. I don't know how you do that, but I recall that the work that Matt Herman did was to look at, I would say, throughout Washington and Oregon and even as far south as California, only two cities, I believe, in California did their own study, but came closer to the ITE manual, and we made that presentation to the council. So that issue is still out there. You may see it. Hopefully we have a five council member now that will probably look at that differently. And we have in our code where developers can go out and do their own study, as you know, and you know, make a better case what number should be used. So that we made all that clear to the council that that opportunity is out there. If developers go out and do their own study and we think it's reasonable, we will accept that. But just arbitrarily change the numbers isn't something that we can support. Yes.
One more thing. I know we're trying to wrap up, but on your economic model, we have had for quite some time policy talking about encouraging resource and extraction in the rural lands. We've never put anything in the comp plan or policies about farming and food production other than the fact that we encourage it. But I think we need to really start looking at its potential for job creation. There's no impact to the county coffers for creation of those jobs, and it actually is helpful in many ways. But we don't acknowledge it.
Yes, it is an issue that comes up often when it comes to resource industries and how do we allocate jobs in the rural area. We have very limited areas planned for commercial and industrial in the rural area. Those limited areas are the rural centers. And as you know, there's always, in the rural centers, we have heavy industry out there. Does it really make sense? We have debated that among my staff, and we said, well, you know, if it's resource-based, that's the only designation we can apply. With the exception of the Rural Industrial Land Bank, our policy and our code requires that if we are successful, we have to designate that for light manufacturing or ML. But it is a good observation. We will continue to see what happens. If it's not in the economic development, God is over there listening. I'll make sure that that is also captured in the rural element. Okay.
I think we're missing an opportunity to actually give it some form of recognition that it is actually a job creation opportunity for us.
Okay. Well noted.
Okay.
So,
we have no more.
And again, you know, not to belabor the effort. Thank you for your patience as you did this. We are putting a lot on your plate. There's more coming. But feel free to give us a call. Myself, Colette, Body, individual staff, on any chapters that you have questions, will be available to help you to the best that we can. Right? Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
How much of a binder's
going to
be big enough?
I was going to say that.
I think it's going to be a binder deal.
Let me just say a volume coming. All right. Our reissue of that being when you fill this one out.
All right. I guess we're adjourned.
Yeah, thank you.